Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:09 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 17th. And when I thought I thought I would kick off today by looking at the bond markets, where the 2-year yield was up a couple of basis points, but it's still trending higher in a pretty persistent manner. The balance of probabilities is still skewed towards 4 interest rate hikes this year, but when we think about what the outlook is from the minutes of the last Fed meeting, well, there's still a lot of disagreement on how many times they're going to raise rates next year. And part of the reason for that is because they're not entirely sure what the rate of interest is that's eventually going to cause a hiccup in the economy. And they obviously don't want to cause panic, but they do want to rearm the interest rate weapons that they have before they have to resort to truly extraordinary measures to support the economy. So what we're certainly seeing is that bond yields are continuing to rise, but it's also, I think, rather notable that the yield curve spread is widening, that it's now at 31 basis points, and this does suggest that we have at least a pause within what is otherwise a pretty consistent medium-term decline. And we can see that over the course of the last few years, there have been some pretty meaningful rallies before the downward bias has been reasserted. Now, there's no real indication on the chart that this period of expansion is over. And when we look at the fact that the 10-year yield is only just really beginning to break up and out of what is effectively a 7-year base formation, well, the balance of probabilities is that when you already have a fairly overextended position on the trend in the 2-year and the 10-year is only just now breaking on the upside, well, the most likely scenario is that we are going to see some widening of the yield curve spread simply because rangers are explosions waiting to happen, and that the balance of probabilities is that the 10-year is probably going to rally faster than the 2-year for a while longer. Well, that's supportive of the economy. What it suggests is that financial conditions are perhaps not as tight as might otherwise have been the case. And when we look at the activity on the stock market, well, one of the things that people have been talking about over the course of the last couple of weeks was that the pressure was starting to come to bear on risk parity strategies. Well, that's not been the case over the last 2 days when you have weakness in bonds, equities are starting to rally. So that does suggest that we're getting some laying off of risk from one asset class and into another. And the S&P 500 today was well off its lows. And it is probably going to close in negative territory, but not in a dynamic fashion. And certainly, I think looking at the chart, we can see that there was a significant rally off the lows in here today. The Dow Jones was also quite volatile. It pulled back in early trading and then recouped the vast majority of it before giving up some of that rebound in the last hour of trading. But this is still a pretty impressive rebound from a short-term, deep oversold condition. And particularly with the Nasdaq closing in positive territory and confirming support in the region of this psychological 7,000 level, that's potentially important here, that we have the primary indices bouncing. Well, they are still trading above their respective trend means, and as long as that remains the case, well, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And when then we look at the Russell, well, the Russell 2000 has been a bit of a leader, and it bounced pretty impressively yesterday, and it has held the majority of its rebound in here today, but it is still below the trend mean. So this is where we see some evidence of trend inconsistency, and this is the first time that it has pulled back below the 200-day moving average in a meaningful fashion in at least the last couple of years. So it really is a time where we need to see a clear move back above the trend mean to confirm that this is more than simply short-term steadying or the beginning of a first step below the peak. So certainly the The jury is still out on the ability of the Russell 2000 to gather the wherewithal to start to reassert demand dominance. And I think it is important to keep an eye on some of the mid-cap sectors, because they are that bit more interest rate sensitive. And the fact that you have such commonality, not just with these the mid-cap sector in the USA, but in Germany and in the UK, then what, and indeed in the in Australia, well, that I think does I think I'm sorry, I'm lost for words. That doesn't happen very often. I think that this is potentially something that we need to pay due attention to, because these have been among the best performing sectors over the course of the last few years, indeed over the last decade. And when you see something that has been previously very consistent becoming less consistent, well, that's something that we need to pay attention to. Where I think we have a clear difference is in Japan, where the second section index has continued to hold the region of 7,000, and it's been ranging above this level now for just about all of this year, but it hasn't sustained a move below it, and that's, I think, a rather important factor. The Nikkei today also bounced from the region of its trend mean. It was up almost 300 points, but it has held its progression of higher reaction lows, and that is despite the fact that it had pulled back in a very alarming fashion over the last 2 weeks. Now, if it can sustain a move back above 23,000, well, then we will start to be able to conclude that this is a meaningful low and not simply short-term steadying. So, we're at a point in markets now where I think it is increasingly likely that Wall Street has bottomed. Now the question is whether it is capable of dragging up the rest of the global markets, because Wall Street has been outperforming all year, whereas the trade war and the strength of the dollar has acted as a headwind for a good many other countries. Well, none more so than China. And the move by the Trump administration to withdraw from the postage, I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact name of the treaty, but the agreement that allows China to send packages to the USA for practically nothing, whereas the reciprocal is that it costs an enormous amount of money relative to the cost of an item to send something to China. That's likely to act as a headwind to private companies that spend a great deal of their time, particularly on eBay. eBay has got a very large number of Chinese suppliers, and the share has been trending lower just about all of this year, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. It's not quite the same situation for Amazon. You certainly have some private sellers on Amazon that. And often you'll see if you go on Amazon and it says that delivery will be anything from 3 to 4 weeks hence, that's almost certainly coming from China. But Amazon's primary business is Prime, and in order to qualify for Prime, then you have to have your goods in their warehouses, and that is an equalizing factor in terms of the shipping costs for all of the various suppliers. So Amazon is less likely to be particularly impacted by this measure, but it's a further deterioration of the relationship between the USA and China, that a lot of the privileges that have been afforded the Chinese economy over the course of the last 20 years are starting to be withdrawn, that there has been a clear demand for the Chinese economy to liberalize and for some fairness to take place. There was a speech by Xi Jinping today where he was denouncing the Deng's efforts to open up the economy, and that's potentially pivotal. That really does help to I think highlight the fact that the Chinese market is weak for a reason, that we have deteriorating governance, that generally speaking it is when you have clear state sponsorship for the stock market is when it does well, and we don't have that today. The one sector where we do have some state sponsorship is in the banking sector, but then that's only in those significant or the systemically important financial institutions bracket, which the main banking sector is dominated by. But all of the risk really resides with the regional banks, and they're not listed. They're very hard to monitor. That's why when S&P put a total of all in the region of $5 trillion of outstanding debt, they were still only estimating a ballpark because it's almost impossible to get down to the granular level in terms of that debt. And the big question that we have with regard to China is what is the natural default rate? Because defaults are comparatively new, and we simply don't know to what extent the government is going to step in. Of course, there is a very easy fix for the, well, it may not be easy, but it's certainly obvious fix for the troubles that the regional banking sector has, and it's property taxes. And if China had property taxes, then the local governments would be flush with cash and their leverage ratios would improve beyond measure. But of course, that would put undue or it would put fresh pressure on the housing market, and that's certainly not something anybody wants when it's already when you already have people protesting in the streets. But when we look at, for example, the Shenzhen B shares, then this index is starting to accelerate lower, and that had been ranging mostly above 1,000 for the better part of nearly 4 years. But now this is a very emphatic breakdown, and this is dominated by the private sector companies. There are no big banks that are listed in the B shares, so this is a true reflection of the state of affairs within the private sector, and it's looking pretty grim. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, well, the Nifty today was down a little bit, and it really does need to push back above the trend mean to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I think perhaps saying it was down a little bit is a misnomer when we have an outside day, and if this is the peak of the rally, it would be a downside Q reversal. But the questions about the banking sector are still very much outstanding, and when we look at the rally that's taken place already, well, it got right up to test the region of the trend mean, and now we have to see some evidence that it can sustain a move above it. And going on the back of the pullback that we've seen in the banking sector today, then that is raising questions about how well that low is going to hold. There are certainly a lot of people thinking about the implications of the rupee start continuing to deteriorate, but I think the much more or the much bigger question right now is the just how intent the RBI is to squeeze the bad loans out of the banking sector, because that is weighing on sentiment and is probably also one of the causal factors behind the continued weakness in the currency, because international investors will not be encouraged back into the market until they have some visibility on just what it is that the or just how thorough the RBI is likely to be. Well, if we look at, for example, a large state-owned bank, then what we've seen so far is has been that the RBI has focused on the private sector banks, but certainly the private sector banks are not the only ones that have got bad loans sitting on their books. But so far, it has not really touched the big state-owned banks. Now, if that situation were to change, well, then that is going to represent a very significant downward or negative connotation for the Indian banking sector, and by extension, potentially even the stock market. But so far, we do need to see some evidence that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond short-term steadying. Now, when we look at what's going on in the rest of Asia, then I tend to keep an eye on Indonesia, considering that it is a large population country with a developing middle class, as well as being a commodity exporter. So it's got a little bit of everything. And the Jakarta Composite has been largely range bound over the course of the last few months. But the rupiah continues to trend lower. Now it was a little bit steadier in here today, and it is oversold in the short term, but it needs a pretty dynamic move to really question the downward bias. The reality is that the dollar continues to advance versus emerging market currencies, and it was in positive territory again today versus the major currencies like the euro. Now, when we think about what it is that why should the dollar be so firm? Well, I don't think we have to look very far for answers. The US economy is still growing faster than Europe. Europe has got some significant existential questions about the euro. And then, of course, you have the issue that the US markets are much more liquid. So that is an additional issue. When, for example, we look at the 10-year Bund, then the yield is still only 46 basis points and it has been contracting. Whereas when we look at the Italian 10-year yield, it's at 3.5% and change, but it's pushing higher. So those spreads are going to continue to widen. And this looks like a bullish chart pattern. It suggests that we are going to see higher yields for Italian debt because the European Commission is going to vote down their budget, and that is going to raise the prospect of Moody's and S&P downgrading the debt to junk. And if that does occur, which is looking increasingly likely, then Italian debt is going to be practically unholdable for the vast majority of pension funds, and that's going to represent a significant funding challenge for the Italian government, and they have significant funding requirements over the course of the next few years. So, definitely, when we look at China, that is where the epicenter of risk is. Europe still has these very big questions that are outstanding, and it also has leverage to the Chinese economy. So, the Euro stocks was down in here today, not in a dynamic manner, certainly, but certainly no follow through on the upside yesterday, following yesterday's pop on the upside. And it really does need to push back up into that overhead trading range to question completing top formation characteristics. So, I think when we then think about what it is that is going on in the world, well, you certainly have the continued US exceptionalism. I saw an article or an interview today with Felix Zuloff on Bloomberg where he was saying that markets are no longer investable, that investors should be raising cash, and that that's likely to be the case for anything from a few days to a few months to a few years from now. That he anticipates that there's going to be a rolling bear market and that we're just at the beginning of it. Well, I think that that is true in Europe and it's definitely true in China. I think it would be arguable to say that that is true in Japan or that that is true right now in the USA. So I think we are starting to move towards a more differentiating way of looking at the markets, that the way that people have been investing over the course of the last decade has been very much ETF driven. But China now represents a significant weighting within the emerging markets. It represents a very significant weighting within the MSCI world. And that's likely to shade the way that people think about those particular indices. Then, when we look at what is driving the market over the medium term, well, access to liquidity in the USA is still abundant. They still have very low unemployment, and by some measures, record low unemployment. And these are factors that continue to sway investors that they should have their money at home. Then, of course, you have the strength of the dollar, and it does look increasingly likely that this dollar rally is not over. I've been I'm sort of I think rattling on about that point now for much of the last few months. I just don't see a realistic argument for why the euro should be rallying, considering the challenges that Europe has outstanding. Well, then if we think about the fact that the dollar has been firm, well, gold prices were comparatively steady in here today, but now the question is whether they're going to hold all of this breakout up out of this range in a bullish dollar environment. And this will be the true test of whether the gold downtrend has in fact been broken. So I think that's another important point here, that we have Wall Street that is starting to rally again, bond yields that are pushing higher, which are eventually going to cause trouble for investors. Then you have the gold price, which on the face of it looks like it has broken its downtrend, and now we need to see evidence that it can hold this move. But the epicenter of risk is China, and if China moves into a more or a deeper pullback, well, then that is going to have knock-on effects for just about everywhere, but most particularly commodity exporters. And the Australian market was in positive territory today. It was up about 1%, and it is bouncing from the most recent higher reaction low, which was back in the first quarter of the year. But it needs to demonstrate that it can push back above and hold a move above 6,000 to really demonstrate that we're still in a trending environment. The Australian dollar remains under pressure, and it was again in weaker territory in here today. But the most important point is that there's been a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs evident since January of this year. So I think that that should help to support the stock market in nominal terms, but it's perhaps better news for the resources sector since they are selling dollars, are selling commodities in dollars and paying salaries in Australian dollars. And the ASX 300 resources index was a little firmer over the course of the last few days as it tests the region of the trend mean. When we look at the copper price, well, copper really does need to demonstrate that it can hold this break up and out of this downtrend that's persisted for most of the year. But more importantly, it needs to push back above the trend mean on a sustained basis to really start to ram home the point that the supply-dominated environment is over. This still represents a difficult environment, particularly with the deterioration that we're seeing in the Chinese markets and how much copper China consumes. So we're not out of the woods just yet in terms of the commodity markets. Then when we look at the Nasdaq Biotech Index, it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it had bounced pretty emphatically yesterday from the region of the trend mean, and that holds the upward bias that we've seen over the course of the last few years. Biotech is almost by definition a cyclical business, and considering just how widespread the adoption of a subscription business model has become, then within the technology sector, its biotech is the clearly a cyclical portion of that business, but so also are the semiconductors. And ASML's earnings were positive in here today, so and also so were Lam Research's, so that did help to stabilize the market. But this has been a marked loss of momentum, and we've seen that there's been this significant pullback. There are exogenous factors that are affecting the semiconductor sector, and not least because of the Chinese hardware hacking scandal. Now, I continue to see the competing articles deciding whether this Bloomberg's report was accurate or not, but the damage has already been done to sentiment. And this index absolutely needs to hold that 1200 point level, But in order to really start to repair confidence, it needs to push back above the trend mean. I've been reading reviews of Nvidia's most recent chips, and they're not great. So this share, which has been losing momentum this year but has been among the best performers over the last 3 years, really does need to hold the region of the trend mean right now. AMD, which had priced in an awful lot of good news ahead of the pullback that we saw over the last few weeks, has stabilized around the $25 area and having unwound about half of its overextension relative to the trend mean. Best case scenario is that it's probably going to range for at least a couple of months here to allow that overextension to close. So I don't think that this is a market where there's no risk. There's certainly risk, and particularly to markets that are either leveraged to China or susceptible to the strength of the US dollar and what that means for foreign currency denominated debt. And then also you have the fact that oil prices continue to hold this $80 area. They spent some time today trading below that level, and they were down about a dollar by the close. But so far, this $80 area continues to hold, and as long as that remains the case, well, we still have a reasonably consistent bullish environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.